All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Pastor Nazarov with me back again.
Well, yeah.
Hard to say, as always. We were both gone.
Yeah.
Pastor David Bowser.
How are you doing, Patrick?
And Natalie McCarter.
Nah.
She is in...
somewhere.
Some Carolina?
Some North, of them.
South?
I don't know.
Hard to say.
Who can say?
Hard to say, yeah.
They're basically just all one Carolina, right?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
All the Carolinas are the same.
Yes. Yeah.
This is our new platform of the podcast. All Carolinas and Dakotas and
Virginias
shall hence be forth. Be
how come Virginia didn't have to become East Virginia?
Because West Virginia broke off from Virginia.
Okay, and they're like, we don't even get a new name.
No,
come on,
Virginia just state. I mean, North and South Carolina defined themselves as North and South Carolina originally.
Yeah. I'm just saying, West Virginia, you messed up. that was a prime look. It's the same.
In their defense, they messed up because they didn't want slavery. So
it's the same.
I'll give them that one.
In that, when you become a grandparent, it's the one time in your life you get to pick your own nickname,
sure,
and you all ruin it.
So what should they have been instead of West Virginia?
I don't know.
Should there have been like a brand new name?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it was obviously going to be like something after like an Indian language.
Probably.
That, you know, that we don't know. So, but when I become a grandparent, I will not be Papa or Mima. Or
no, you're not going to be Papa? What are you going to be as a grandparent?
Again, you can pick your own name.
I know. So I'm asking what you're going to pick.
Blade.
You're an idiot. All right.
I think that's a good one. Yeah.
Are you going to be Grandpa Blade or are you just going to be Blade?
Just Blade.
Blade.
All right, kids, do you want to go to Blade's house?
No kid wants to go to Blade's house.
I do.
You're not a kid. All right.
All right.
I look forward to seeing how your relationship with your grandchildren will be.
It's going to be wonderful. Welcome back again. We're back after a month hiatus.
Yeah, a little vacay.
We came back, you know, so much growth and wisdom.
I mean,
it took us a while to figure out the soundboard.
Yeah, enough growth and wisdom that we forgot what we were doing.
Yeah.
We spent the last 20 minutes trying to remember how to work this thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But, you know, what to be expected.
Not everything is like riding a bicycle, all right?
Yeah.
It's okay.
Since we've been back, we both went to Puerto Rico.
We did.
With our high school youth.
Yep.
You went to Tahoe?
I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With my family. Yeah.
Yeah.
None of our high school youth were on that trip. That
was sure. And I have a broken dishwasher.
There you go.
So, you know, life is happening all around us.
Miracles abound.
Yeah. Yeah. Puerto Rico was a very good trip.
It was.
Yep. The bioluminescence was a letdown.
You were disappointed by it. I agree.
Well, there were no bioluminescence.
There was. I saw it. And the kids that I was with saw it.
Mm. They did not see it the way it was described to me.
I agree that I did not see it the way that I had seen it before.
Yeah.
As they say, it's all very weather dependent and all sorts of other stuff. I mean, it's biology. It's not like a machine.
I do have some exciting news that happened.
Does this have to do with bioluminescence?
It does not.
Okay.
While we were on hiatus, we did not get to cover this in the moment. Okay,
you're like yelling into the microphones here, man. You gotta tone it down. Tone down the enthusiasm.
I'm amping up for this thing.
Is it the World Cup?
No.
Tour de France?
No.
Wimbledon?
Far more important than any of those things.
Wow. Okay. Throwing down. What you got?
The world's loudest person has a new record holder.
The world's loudest person? Oh, no wonder you were yelling. Were you going for a record here?
No. From Australia, Joseph McGrill Bait Up. He's an Australian professional air conditioner cleaner and honorary town crier, has been officially recognized as the world's loudest person.
How does one become the world's loudest person?
He yelled, now.
I'm suddenly feeling the urge to like whisper, just so you know. Yes.
At 122.4 decibels.
That sounds like a lot.
It is louder than a jet engine.
How? What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He produced a sound out of his own body that's louder than a jet engine?
That is what this says.
This sounds made up. I don't think this is real.
As much noise as a jet taking off.
That's very loud.
Yeah. And the previous record holder of 121.7 was North Ireland school teacher Annalisa Flanagan, who yelled, quiet.
That's funny.
That seems to make sense. Yeah. I bet, you know, like school teacher yelling over kids.
Sure. Yeah.
I wonder if he probably had an Irish accent.
I mean, she's from Ireland. I would assume so.
Maybe he had an Australian accent.
Probably.
I mean, now, though, it's, you know.
Yeah. I mean, not, how much of an Australian accent are you going to hear now?
I'm really going to pop for the.
He didn't yell dingo.
Yes.
Or shrimp on the Barbie. Yeah.
Those were the things he should have done.
Foster's.
That's not a knife. Crikey.
Yeah.
Now, in fairness, I'm going to say this. We have not recorded our office manager, Rick Jonasek, to see if he's over 122.4.
It's a possibility, yeah. Maybe he has a new...
I think it might be there. I've heard him and you talking on speakerphones in your office, and I'm in the middle.
Listen, Rick's office is such that you can hear him anywhere in the building when he speaks.
I think that's a Rick thing.
It is not just a Rick thing.
I think Rick is just that loud.
I mean, but you can hear me from my office. I'm not that loud.
Yeah, but you're closer to me than Rick is. Rick has to go around several bins to get to me.
Yeah, but there's no doors.
Yeah. He's not going through doorways?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Jet engine is very loud.
Mr. McGrail bat up. So there's no way you can actually practice for this. You have to just keep it for the day.
Okay. I feel like we're all up for training for this then. If we can't practice, then any one of us could do it.
You may be. At the moment of need, yeah. My voice could be that loud.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably not. But still, he said he took him 7 attempts for one word, and his voice was shot for the next couple of days. Oh,
geez. 7 attempts. Okay, so he tried 7 times just to yell now that loud, and then he couldn't speak for several days.
Yeah.
Okay.
What word would you yell if you know you were going for this?
Probably profanity, right?
Like, that I mean, seems, wouldn't it be like, that seems guttural, like it's gonna come out. Like, if you've got to yell something, that just makes sense.
Yeah,
quiet for the teacher, that makes sense.
Yes,
like I think that
embodied.
Is,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. I would be like, can I stub my toe?
Yeah,
like,
am I allowed to hurt myself first?
Can I think step on a Lego?
Yeah, what kind of assistance am I allowed to have?
Like, to get that extra oomph at the last minute.
Can my child, quote unquote, accidentally headbutt me in the gut?
Yeah. Can I watch my child jumping on the couch with an open container of apple juice?
After already telling them to stop.
Can that happen? It's more of in the moment. I can't, I agree with you. Maybe you can't practice for this.
Yeah.
Now, he also is proud to say he's not the world. He's the men's world record holder, not the world.
Oh, okay.
Because he wants that Miss Flanagan to keep her record as well.
But he does have a louder sound than her as well.
Yeah, but she's the loudest woman and he's the loudest man.
That's but he is louder of both of them.
But he is the loudest, yes.
So he is the loudest human and the loudest man. She is the loudest woman.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And he was searching for Guinness World Records for feats in the realm of town crying.
Didn't know there were records to be had in that feat, but okay.
Yeah. Would you want to be a town crier?
I think I'd be good at that.
Yeah.
Walk through the town, ring a bell, and then yell like announcements.
There's only so many town things you can be.
Yeah. Town crier seems like a fun one.
Yeah.
I mean, better that than like town executioner. I don't want that gig.
Yeah. I'm probably more going for the town idiot.
I don't think that's a paid gig.
Is town crier paid gig?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
I think once upon the time, or maybe at least like elected, like it was like a position of rapport and responsibility.
Okay. Yeah.
Repute. That's the word I was looking for, not rapport.
What other town crier, town drunk, town fool?
Town fool. I think town fool and town idiot are kind of one and the same.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, then you got like, town mayor.
Yeah.
Town judge.
Okay.
Town wisequaking farmer.
Yeah. I like the first part. Less into the farmer. Right. all right. In 2024 guild competition, he had the loudest ois, which was 98 decibels. That's so.
Ois.
I don't know what that, I mean.
Isn't that a cheer? Aussie, 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 ois. Isn't that a thing that they say?
Maybe it's an Australian thing. Yeah. And he did experiment with several words for his world before settling on now.
Now. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to think about different words being able, because now is very, it's not so harsh that you like have to accent your T or something like that, but it's not so soft that it automatically like if you were to choose a profanity and started off with a that soft F sound, that's harder probably to get loud as opposed to a nice N, which kind of comes out of volume. I'm now trying to like scientifically prove this for myself. I'm sorry. I think we've overanalyzed his yelling.
This is the second world record that McGrail Badup has
what happened. Else does McGrail Badup have?
In 2019, he broke a speed record for an archer shooting 10 arrows.
Okay.
60 seconds.
That's fast, I guess.
One every 6 seconds?
Yeah, faster than I could do it. I'm assuming he has to hit targets too, not just like fire them at random.
No, I'm like, just do all 10 at once. Seems easy. If they all just like are falling on the ground
in front of me,
yes. A string was pulled back. The arrow moved. What more do you want? But that has since been broken by a 7-year-old.
No wonder he had to go for a new record.
Yeah, the 7-year-old beat him by 11 seconds. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
7-year-old crushing it. I mean, the 7-year-old doesn't have as far to reach because short arms and short back.
And that's true. Maybe my children could also beat this loudness record. You know,
I did not consider this. Yeah,
when withheld a snack that they want, maybe that this is a possibility.
Yeah. I like the way you're thinking.
Yeah. All right, let's get to our main topic. We're back with Hard Things in the Bible.
Woo.
All right, so that was the last episode we recorded. It was a hard topic in the Bible.
Back-to-back hard things.
Yes. Do you remember what it was?
No.
I don't either. I was hoping you would.
We got this. We have the technology. We can track this down.
We could look at our phones.
We can indeed find it. You keep talking.
I'm trying to remember.
You keep...
Hopefully it's not what we're about to cover.
It's definitely not.
I don't think so.
We've not talked about this.
Yeah.
I'm 100% confident in that.
Me too. All right. Well, today we're going to talk about a parable of Jesus.
Okay.
Luke 16, the parable of the dishonest manager.
Okay.
So this parable is Luke 16:1-13, and it's kind of in the midst of
Isaac and Abraham. That's what it was.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great stuff.
Yeah. Definitely not what we're talking about today.
Wonderful podcast. It's great.
It was a good one. It was a month ago. Lots
happened since then. This is kind of in the midst of like a string of parables that Jesus is just firing off.
Boom, boom, boom,
and
boom.
Luke 15 is like the clearest of clear waters for me in the Bible.
Luke 15, yeah.
Luke 15 is so beautiful. Everything about it is wonderful. What it's telling us about God and God's love is just like the, like you can see all the bioluminescence, all the light of God.
Sure.
And then this is murky and like immediately pivots to something that's really tough to navigate.
Sure.
All right. Do you want to read this or do you want to sum this up?
Let me sum it up and then you can fill in the gaps.
That sounds great. I'm going to let you do that.
Okay. So Luke 16, this would be the parable. We sometimes refer to it as the parable of the shrewd manager.
Yeah.
That's often how it's titled.
Sure.
And so in this story, Jesus talks about a king, a ruler, who is unhappy with his manager and says, I'm not happy with how you're doing my work or how you're managing my books. So you have to give me an accounting of everything you've done. Mm-hmm. And so the manager's like, I'm going to be in big trouble. This is not going to go well for me. So I need to go and make some friends. And so he goes to the people who owe his king money and he says, okay, take your debt and reduce it by like a lot. Like one person owes him like 100 of something and he says, make it 50. And somebody owes something, some other amount and he says, make it a lot less. And so these people are like, oh, this is great. This guy's a really good friend. And then he comes back and the king finds out what he's done. And we would expect the king to like punish this guy, right? Because this guy has been, now ripping off the king. And instead, the king comes back and says, way to go. You have made friends by dishonest or by shrewd living. It's kind of like the punchline of the story, which is not like a good joke, but it's a, you know, the kind of key point. Like you've made friends by this shrewd management, this dishonest living. And then it goes on to something about like, so the children of this age will do something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember.
I got this one because this is an interesting line.
Yeah.
Out of an interesting parable that doesn't make a lot of sense, it gets weirder.
It does.
Not easier.
Yeah.
And his master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourself by means of dishonest wealth, so when it is gone, they may welcome you into the eternal homes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, an odd ending for Jesus.
Strange, yeah.
It's strange. This does pop up in the lectionary, though, so you have had to preach on this a few times.
Yeah, a couple times. Recently, too. I think it was just last year I had to do one on this.
All right, and then there's kind of an ending that he kind of gives.
Mm, okay, what's our ending?
This is 10 through 13.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, it's like outside the parable, so we're no longer talking about the manager. So do you want me to read this?
I can't summarize it.
And I'm actually going to get a little bit further
this. We're gonna keep
going. I've got actually a hot take about this, and I'm curious to see your opinion end here. Whoever is faithful at a very little is faithful also in much. And whoever is dishonest in very little is dishonest also in much. If then you have not been faithful with the dishonest wealth, who will entrust you to the true riches? And if you have not been faithful with what belongs to another, who will give you what is your own? No slave can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, you know, like when I think of like, what is Jesus going with? 10 through 13, that section I just read, makes more sense than 8 and 9, what I read just before that, which is like, children of this age are better at dealing with shrewdness than children of light, which seems like those are Christians. And make friends with dishonest wealth.
Yeah.
Because then maybe they'll welcome you into their eternal homes.
Mm-hmm. Which is odd.
Which is weird.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
What do we do with this?
What do we do with this?
Yeah.
I've got several ways that people have tried to make sense of this.
Okay.
But do you want to go with like how you have kind of approached this?
No, I want to hear what other people have come up with first.
Because maybe some of these might hit some of you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this seems to be the most common way.
Okay.
Jesus is praising wisdom, not dishonesty.
Okay.
All right.
But he does say shrewdness.
Yes.
Okay. So, but all right. So what's our point of Jesus is praising wisdom?
So basically the idea is like the guy's about to lose his job.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of giving up, he acts decisively to secure his future.
This is lame.
I agree.
I don't like this at all.
Yeah.
Jesus's point is not to make a decision when you're about like, no, just no.
So he's saying, don't be dishonest. It says, like, look how intentional this man is preparing for his future. And the children of this world often work harder for temporary things than Christians work for eternal things.
I mean, I think that's fair. I think that's a reasonable critique that, like, we work harder for this world than we do for the future. That's fine. But I don't think that Jesus is saying, like, oh, look how decisive he's being in this moment, that he's working hard for this other thing because he sees his job as threat. Like, no, I don't think that's what's happening here.
Yeah, I agree. All right, number two. The manager is removing his own commission.
Okay.
So some scholars are saying the manager isn't actually stealing.
Mm.
He is the wealthy landowners, the wealthy man, the king at the top, charges his amount. The managers are adding to it to kind of take from the pile as it comes. And so when he's lowering the bill, he's not cheating the king, he's cheating basically his own profit that he was putting into his own pockets. And so the master's not losing anything. The debtors are grateful because now this extra tax on top of it is there. And he is sacrificing that brief bit of income to gain relationships and also to gain the favor of the king.
Yeah.
So what do we think?
I think this more closely aligns to probably how I tend to fall on this. So yeah, I'm intrigued by this. I think that's a helpful way to think about it. I mean, it certainly aligns with what we know about tax collection at the time of Jesus, that, you know, tax collectors were reviled because they would collect on top of whatever was owed, and that was kind of their payment. And especially if we operate under the assumption of, okay, this manager was being paid something and was taking this as extra, and so he was not satisfied with his wages but felt like he needed more and was cheating his neighbors in order to get more. Yeah, I can get behind that for sure.
Yeah, for my notes here, the weakness of this interpretation is the text never really says this.
It does not. We're making some interpretive leaps for sure.
Yeah, and maybe to a first century audience, those leaps would not have been difficult to make, you know, and that they would have just like read that immediately. Maybe not. You know, it's hard to say, you know, like, but yeah, okay, so here we go. So the manager was actually always dishonest and now is actually honest.
Right.
In this kind of way. All right. Number three. The manager removes a legal interest. So here the master is the one charging more illegally for kind of the interest on top of what he should be paid, and the manager is like cutting out that illegal interest that the master is charging. And the master can't say anything because he's not actually allowed to do that, because the Israelites were not allowed to charge interest to other Israelites.
I don't like that one.
Yeah. I mean, almost always, like in Jesus's parables, whomever is at the top is kind of a fill-in for God.
Almost always.
Almost always. So whether that's landowner, king, father, you know, like that, it's always kind of like that's kind of the God role of the parable. So if that follows the pattern and the master is the God role, it's like God role is actually cheating all of y'all.
Yep.
And the manager is the one who's the hero of the story.
Right.
And the master is the one who's the villain. Yeah, I don't like this either.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, for me, that makes interpretive leaps that are harder to get to than the one previously, right? I mean, it just switches the roles of who is responsible for the cheating. But yeah, it's harder for me to get to that place from the text than it is for me to get to the first one. I guess it was actually the second one, but you know what I mean.
All right.
Number four.
I've got, let's see, six.
Okay. Moving right through.
Actually, I have seven.
Oh.
Maybe eight. Good. Oh, no, eight. I have eight.
Too bad. Seven's a holy number.
I can cut one.
Okay.
Jesus intentionally uses a morally flawed example.
I mean, this would not be the only place where Jesus does that.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting about that opportunity is that Jesus seems to lift up the morally flawed example, and he does not do that in other. So there's a parable where Jesus has what we know as the parable of the unjust judge. And so the unjust judge basically refuses to grant this widow justice, and the woman keeps coming and saying, grant me justice against my adversary. And then finally the judge is like, oh, fine, just because you keep bothering me, I'll do this, right? And Jesus's point in that parable is, if this is what the unjust judge does, how much more will God, you know, grant justice for his chosen ones, or something like that. I don't remember exactly the phrasing at the end. So there, like, the non-moral example, right, is lifted up to say, look at what God would actually do here. It's like, oh no, how much more, you know, be shrewd. Like, and so it's supporting the shrewdness. So this makes it a little bit more challenging for me to make that flip in this interpretation.
Yeah. Yeah. I agreed. You know, so this one, like the idea, like, even this bad person gets, like, understands something here.
Yeah.
And, like, I want you to understand that thing, but this is not a moral lesson. This is not a, this is not a, an Aesop's fable here. Yeah. This is, I'm just telling you, even bad people get, you need to start thinking about tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hopefully, I'm not sure kind of the ending kind of lines up with, like, you need to start thinking about the eternal tomorrow with kind of what Jesus says towards the end. But at least, like, I think there's maybe something there.
Yeah.
You know,
I think this is another ant for me.
I would probably agree, but I think there is something here.
Okay.
You know, again, like, even this bad human being gets something.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Money should be used to build eternal relationships.
Okay. Yeah. So we're just going to buy our way into eternal relationships.
This does kind of line up with some of the text in here.
I hear that.
Which is verse 9 here. I'll read it again. I tell you, make friends for yourself by means of dishonest wealth.
Yeah. I mean, the question for me there is, what do we mean by dishonest wealth? And what is dishonest wealth in the scope of God's understanding as well, right? Like, dishonest wealth from the perspective of the world versus what's dishonest from the perspective of God, and this is where we'll ultimately get to what I'm talking about, I think are different things. And so I hear what they're saying, and I don't disagree that you can get to that place from the text. I don't think that's the ultimate purpose that we're supposed to take away from it.
Yeah.
But I won't give it an amp because I do see how you land there. I kind of a plain text, if you want to say, call it a plain text reading of the story. I see where you get there.
Yeah, I think that this is where the text really gets the most challenging for me, is that the parable that we kind of get and the lessons learned, because Jesus does give us a bit of, like, here's not a clear lessons learned like in some other parables that he gives, but we do get a...
Here's a thing. Mm-hmm.
They seem contradictory.
A little bit.
So, like, it does feel like how we navigate that is a challenge. So picking up on, like, one sentence to try to make sense of it, I do get.
Yeah.
And this is a sentence that, and you know, this would be like, how to be generous and generosity. What does that lead us to?
Yeah.
Ultimately, you know, greater relationships and greater investment in what God is doing. So, I mean, I agree with generosity as a message.
I like generosity.
Quite sure we're getting there with this parable.
Yeah, I hear that.
But I do think that maybe at least the message is good from this interpretation. All right, number six. The whole parable is about stewardship.
I mean, I'm not going to say it's not, but I also don't, I don't think that's clear enough to say, like, yes or no to it. Because I think you could say this whole parable is about stewardship and still be completely wrong on what it's trying to tell us.
Yeah.
So maybe.
This would be, nothing belongs to the manager. Everything belongs to the master.
Yeah.
So we are managers, not owners.
I mean, all that's true, but then you're still not dealing with the fact that the manager's, like, not letting this, not giving back to the owner what is supposed to be theirs. And the manager's like
praised for it.
Yeah. Like that, yeah. Like we're missing a piece here.
Yeah. Like if it is like, this is more proof of your dishonesty and selfishness, and like, therefore you get a greater punishment. But like, yeah, it ends with kind of like a happy note for the shrewd guy.
Yeah. Which is just weird.
It is weird.
Okay. So that's six.
Seven.
Mm-hmm.
Children of Light should be just as strategic.
Okay.
So again, this is from verse 8. You know, like, hey,
yeah,
children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the children of light. So children of light, you need to learn from like our worldly neighbors.
Yeah. I think if you take this and combine it with number two, which if I'm remembering correctly, number two was the one where he like the manager cut the debts because he was cutting out his own thing.
Yeah.
Like I think there you can see it. Like if I'm a child of light, right, if I'm a follower of Jesus, I'm supposed to be looking at the ways that I can cut out my own profits that are taken at the expense of my neighbor, trusting that my manager is going to provide, sorry, not my manager, my king is going to provide for me.
Yeah.
I think you can combine those and get to a really healthy place.
Yeah.
And an interesting interpretation. I don't think it can just be, we're supposed to be shrewd like this corrupt manager. I think you have to look at the manager and say, what is the manager doing correctly?
Yeah.
And get to a place of what's happening that's correct that we're supposed to be following. And then I can get there.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. And then finally, wealth is a test.
I mean, I don't disagree with that, but I don't think that's the ultimate point of this parable.
I think this is probably leaning into the 10 through 13, that second section I read, which is like, whoever is faithful in little will be faithful in much. No one can serve two masters, you know, and you cannot serve God and wealth. You know, like that's just like...
Which is also one of those pieces that's interesting when you read all the gospels together, because that same expression, right, you can't serve two masters, is found in other gospels, but it's not paired with this parable in those other gospels. And so...
This only exists here in Luke.
The parable only exists here, but the two, or you can't serve two masters, exists at least in Matthew, I think in Mark as well. And so you, when you look at that outside of the context of this parable, how does that change your understanding of what we mean by that, right? I mean, when you read it, this is right after this parable. Now we're trying to connect it back to the shrewd manager, versus when you read it and it's not connected to a shrewd manager at all, really changes how you perceive the test that may or may not be coming along with it.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. This is a tough one. Like, it does not make a ton of sense.
Yeah. So if I were offering my take, and then I want to hear your hot take.
Yeah, you bet.
So I think I probably align most closely with two.
Yeah.
I would not have said that it was necessarily directly that he was taking out his own profits, but some element that the manager was ripping these people off, and that the king wasn't actually upset that he wasn't. You read the text, right, and you read the story from the first place, and you think that the manager is stealing from the king.
Yeah.
And perhaps the king is not upset that the manager is stealing from the king. Perhaps the manager or the king is upset because the manager has been ripping people off.
Yeah.
All right. And so perhaps the king wants an accounting of his books because he wants to see that the manager has been ripping these people off. And the manager goes back and is like, I shouldn't be ripping these people off. The king's going to find me out. I need to go and fix this. And so he's, you know, whether he's removing his own interest from it or something else, but he's now going and charging what people should have actually been charged originally. Mm-hmm. And so he's freeing himself from this burden and actually living into what the king wanted for him all along, which may seem shrewd or dishonest to some because it seems like he's cheating these books, but in reality, he's living into what was always been called to. And if we look at that from the perspective of like the world versus the king, right? If we're looking at God's reign, right? Perhaps God's reign isn't 100 bushels of whatever, but God's reign is 30 bushels of whatever. And that we can live in and survive in that sort of abundance as opposed to the massing of abundance of, we need 100 of everything, which is what the world would purport. Mm-hmm. And so then the children of light live into that world in which we don't need in the same way that the world tells us we need. So it's probably a combination of like 2 and 6, I think, or 2 and 7, whatever those two were.
Yeah,
that would be where I tend to fall on something like this.
Okay. I think it's a reasonable take. You know, again, it's a challenging one to navigate.
I'm not
going to
get X'd out. That's good.
I think that it, you know, this is probably, the reality is like there's probably more going on culturally or behind the scenes that we just have no real idea.
Yeah.
And we're just doing our best to navigate 2,000 years later in a different culture without the same context or information that the audience has.
Mm-hmm.
And navigating it for like, what does it say to us? I think that's a very reasonable take.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's my hot take.
Let's hear it. What you got?
This
is never supposed to be in the Bible.
No. It's sarcasm.
Oh, okay. All right.
This is a joke parable. This is not meant to teach anyone anything.
Nothing.
Well, no, it's not meant to teach us anything. It's meant to teach the Pharisees at that time. That's the audience for this parable. So
do we get that from the text that Jesus is speaking to the Pharisees?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
All right. Because I'm going to read an extra little section right at the end.
Oh, sure. You held on to
it. I held on to it. I got it cropped over here, ready to go.
This is why in the court of law, there are rules about disclosing evidence ahead of time so that all parties can be appropriately informed.
So Luke 15 is basically about the depth of God's love and how when the person at the top, the shepherd, the coin owner, the father, the love motivates that person to pursue directly.
Yeah. Right? So just quick recap, Luke 15, someone loses a coin, they go find the coin. 100 sheep are lost, 99 sheep are there, one sheep is lost, you go find the lost sheep. And then story of what we know is the prodigal son.
Yes.
That's all Luke 15, just so we're all clear on what we're referencing.
All about finding the lost. And the person who's doing that finding is the person at the top.
Yes.
The king, or the shepherd, the money owner, and the father.
Yes. And there's always a celebration when they find that one thing that was lost.
Always a celebration.
Not over the ones who stayed, but over the one that was lost. Yeah.
And so this, we introduce a master and people in debt, but there is an intermediary, someone in between those two people who is navigating their finances and navigating how the people who owe the king, they're the one in between. And they're the one telling them, this is what you owe, this is how to pay, this is how to things. And if that the system is threatened, they're the one saying, like, then I'm not going to abolish the system. I'm not going to get rid of me.
Yeah.
I'm going to now lean heavier on you, the person. And so instead of like leaning more towards like, I need 100, well, fine, let's just make it 50 because I'm still going to keep the system in place. And so to end with the, you cannot serve two masters. You cannot serve God and wealth. And so the next section says, the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard all this, and they ridiculed him. And he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves in the sight of others, but God knows your hearts. For what is prized by human is abomination in the sight of God. So this is how I read it, which again, I'm definitely reading into the text. I'm reading Luke 15, the Pharisees listening in on this parable, like, no, this is not how it's supposed to work. That sheep is not more important than the 99. And that son who wasted all the money should not be welcomed back in. And then finally Jesus
is
like,
which is also a reasonable reading of those things.
Very reasonable, And then finally, like, okay, Jesus talking about this shrewd manager and things. And I think maybe now is like the Pharisees like, okay, this is making a little more sense to me. This is kind of how it's supposed to look. And I'm the intermediary between God and man, and I'm the one who handles the bill to kind of settle them up, whether that's the moral bill or the temple bill or whatever. And then when Jesus flips that at the end of like, no, like if you have not been faithful with dishonest wealth, who's going to trust you with true? Like if you're not faithful here with your wealth because you're dishonest, God's not going to entrust you with anything. And finally, you know, you cannot serve both God and wealth. And this is the one that really makes them ridicule and like burn against Jesus. Because this was the one I think that they were like, I see where you're going. And then Jesus uses it against them.
Yeah.
So this is my take. Again, I don't have evidence beyond a few of the things that I'm kind of reading into the text and like how things are kind of how the story goes for me. But it's like, this is really just sarcasm. And it's there to kind of lure in these Pharisees and drop that final bomb on them of like, this is what you're doing. And this is why what you're doing is wrong. And that's the one, because they're lovers of money, that's the one they ridicule Jesus on. Or some of the other versions are like, they grumble against Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, and then Jesus hits them with, God knows what's in your hearts.
Yeah.
So
I think it's a really intriguing play for Jesus to tell the story in that way at that time.
Yeah.
My question would be, okay, if Jesus is telling a story that's purely sarcasm for the Pharisees, why does Luke capture that story and pass it on for generations later? And so like, how do we continue to wrestle? Like, do we see ourselves then as the Pharisees? Like, are we acting as an, like, and how is it? So I think there are ways in which it still applies and has meaning for us. So I don't want to say it's just sarcasm and doesn't have any meaning whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I think that within the sarcasm, what are we to take away from it, right? What are we to hear? And I think that's where we can still make a really interesting connection for ourselves.
Yeah. And so, again, like, I think this one, it's hard to get, like, the parable actually itself has anti-meaning into it, which is tough to kind of like how we've always navigated most of Jesus's parables, because we're looking for like, who's the God in the situation?
Right.
Who's the me in the situation?
Right.
How does God work? And this one has like, there is no God in the situation and there is no you in the situation unless you are the dishonest manager. And unless you are the one who is the gatekeeper between God and humans and who's asking for whatever to pass on between, you know, God and you. And so, again, the text itself, again, maybe if by chance that this is a correct reading, maybe the original audience would have heard that or seen that better. Yeah. And Luke just doesn't quite capture that in like a clear explanation, because again, it is very bizarre.
I mean, there are definitely other scholars who have done work to show Jesus's humor and use of sarcasm. So it's not out of character for Jesus to use that as a rhetorical strategy. It would just be, has he done it here? And I think it's a reasonable read to say, like, this is what I see Jesus pointing to, especially when you tie in that end of like, oh, the Pharisees were upset by this. Like, I think that's a,
So that's just kind of like how, because I remember when I was working at summer camp, I had like a 15-year-old ask me about this parable. I'm like, I don't understand it.
Man, what 15-year-old was reading this parable?
What a dork. Now he's a pastor now. And I was like, let me
dork
read
applause.
It a few times and I'll see what, come up with an explanation. Because I read it the first time. I was like, I really got nothing here.
Yeah.
Like, I any explanation, I think, has its weaknesses.
Yeah,
And like, because it is so bizarre, and like it does have like that even Jesus' teaching about it, like 8 and 9 are really weird, and then 10 through 13 are really weird.
Yeah.
Like it just is weird. And so I was like, this is the way that I can make the most sense of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I could be, all of us, we could get to heaven and God's like, it's none of those, you dummies. Yeah. It's so obvious.
How did you not get this?
Why would you not put these two things together?
But what I appreciate about your story most is not just that you came up with an option, but that you said, like, I'm going to read this a couple times, right? Like, I'm not going to read it once and expect to have an answer. And I think that's one of the things that we can sit with all of these hard stories from the Bible, is that you can't just read it once and think, oh, I've got it figured out.
Yeah.
If you're coming away from almost any part of scripture, even the prodigal son, right? Which is like, as you said, like Luke 15, one of the clearest depictions of God's grace. Even that, every time we read it, we can come away with something new and learning something new. And so when you have these hard texts, we can't just throw them away and say, I'm never going to read that again. And we can't just assume that we have it figured out because we've read one answer, right? We have to keep reading it, keep coming back to it, keep seeing what the Spirit is going to reveal for us, because it's a living word, right? The word continues to breathe in us, through us, even now.
Yeah.
And so we have to keep coming back to it. And I think it's really beautiful that you honored this 15-year-old dork's request and you were willing to read it multiple times and to kind of sit with it and let it just bubble through you and see what comes up.
Yeah. All right. There you go. Hard part of the Bible, Luke 16.
Yeah.
If you have thoughts, we'd love to hear them.
Absolutely.
Honestly.
BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com. I'm pretty sure that email still exists. It's been a month, but I think it's still there.
Yeah. I mean, even if I walk away and be like, I don't think you're right. And you might think, listen to both of our explanations of this and be like, I don't think you're right.
Yeah. Those guys are idiots. It was number two or is number one all along.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was not number one, by the way. Yeah. Number one was stupid.
Yeah.
That was the first one that you said.
Yeah. My notes are all messed up. Whatever.
That's fine. It was number one.
Number one. Yeah. So dumb.
Go back and listen to it. You'll remember. You'll all say, oh, he's right. Number one was dumb. That's
But I do think this is an interesting one here.
Yeah.
All right.
I like when hard teachings come from Jesus.
Me too, honestly.
Yeah. Because, like, I mean, we do one with, like, Abraham and Isaac. Like, it's this ancient story that's even ancient by the time Jesus is around.
Yeah.
And certainly it connects to our faith, but it connects to our faith so much more distantly than like, oh, these are the words of Jesus. Like, this is the guy we're supposed to be following. Like, we really have to wrestle with this. And I appreciate that too.
Jesus does have a few other places that are like,
he's got some other stuff.
Pretty weird.
Yeah.
Pretty odd choices of language.
Mm-hmm.
When he calls a woman kind of like a dog.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It is.
It's not easy. Maybe we'll do that in a future episode.
Who knows? We'll probably forget.
Almost certainly. What are we talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode, we're glad to have you back listening with us again. We'll be back next week, and you can find all of our past episodes at BeyondSundayPodcast.com. And of course, send us your takes on this story or recommendations for other hard stories that you want us to look at. You can send us to BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.